Chinese money has somehow fostered corruption, has distorted the way politics works in Solomon Islands.
Solomon Islands discontent erupts. It's Monday, November 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a new coronavirus variant. The men who made a unique COVID vaccine. Afghan refugees celebrate Thanksgiving. A slick tourist problem. Coping with challenging times. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Papua New Guinea has joined Australia in sending police officers to neighboring Solomon Islands after violent disturbances this past week. The unrest has threatened to topple the government of Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Solomon Islands Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare says his government is still in control, but has asked Australia and Papua New Guinea for help to provide security. Australia has sent a contingent of about 120 federal police officers and troops. Papua New Guinea has sent about 35 police and corrections officers. The deployments followed days of violence and looting in the Solomon Islands. This week, smoke was seen rising from the capital Honiara's Chinatown district after demonstrators tried to storm the parliament. Police used tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse crowds, demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Sogavare. He was elected leader for the fourth time in 2019. Police said Saturday that three bodies were found in a burnt-out building in Honiara's Chinatown district. The cause of the deaths is unclear. Analysts say the current unrest has deep roots. Among the triggers have been long-standing ethnic tensions, allegations of official corruption, and disputes over the government's move to more closely align with China. In 2019, the Solomon Islands switched its diplomatic allegiance from Taiwan to China. James Batley is a former Australian High Commissioner to the Solomon Islands and a Distinguished Policy Fellow at the Australian National University's Coral Bell School of Asia-Pacific Affairs. He says community tensions over links with China have stoked the unrest.
It's not so much foreign policy per se, but I think this diplomatic switch has fed into those pre-existing grievances. And in particular, the sense that the Chinese have interfered in politics in Solomon Islands, that Chinese money has somehow fostered corruption, has distorted the way politics works in Solomon Islands.
There were disturbances following national elections in the Solomon Islands in 2006. Much of Honiara's Chinatown was destroyed then because of speculation that businesses with ties to China had influenced the ballot. Australia led a multinational peacekeeping mission to the Solomon Islands in 2003, and it maintained a security presence on the South Pacific archipelago until 2017. The islands are 2,000 kilometres northeast of the Australian city of Brisbane. The mostly Melanesian South Pacific nation is home to about 700,000 people and has about 120 indigenous languages. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
More on the Solomon Islands unrest may be found on our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our website, that's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China ties blamed for South Pacific unrest. Myanmar junta and armed resistance dig in for long slog. COVID-19 era border closures stunt business, benefiting China's aim of self-reliance. Inside China's brash new approach to state media. Hong Kong protest film wins at Chinese language Oscars. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories with photos and video and much more on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter. And of course, you'll always find us at our home, voanews.com. We have much more to come on VOA Asia. Right now, we take a slight detour from Asia for a virus mutation that may quickly end up in the region and the rest of the world. Businesses in South Africa are worried about the implications of the new coronavirus variant called Omicron that was discovered in the country last week. Travel bans already are mounting, and many fear lockdown restrictions will return. Linda Givtash reports from Johannesburg.
Let's go, Britta!
Mimosas were guzzled Saturday at the trendy Altar Bar in Johannesburg, but despite the steady stream of brunchgoers, the staffers were on edge. The discovery of the new coronavirus variant called Omicron has sparked fears that another lockdown is looming. Bar manager Josh Young says it would be devastating for the business that only opened in September.
I have warned my staff members that there could be a lockdown coming in, and how are we going to react to it? How are we going to operate after that? It is a worry because you're basically taking money out of people's pockets, because this is what they do to survive.
Scientists are still scrambling to determine what risks Omicron poses. Dr. Michelle Groom with South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases says getting vaccinated is still vital to preventing severe illness or death. She says ongoing precautions like wearing masks and social distancing and limiting indoor gatherings will help reduce the virus's spread. Groom says if hospitals get overburdened, South Africa will have to consider more restrictions.
I know no one is in favor of the alcohol bans, but I think it really has shown to decrease the number of trauma-related hospitalizations. And if we get to the point where there, you know, is a need for additional hospital capacity, you know, something like that may need to be considered.
That is worrisome news for restaurants, bars, and stores that are still struggling to recover from lockdowns in June and July. Mike Kotsiavos co-owns a liquor store in Johannesburg.
I'm panicking a bit. Turnover is down quite a bit. And it's only slight improvement over this last period that we've been trading normally, which is about over a month. So we're suffering, basically.
It's also affecting his personal life. The 71-year-old said he hasn't seen his daughter, who lives in Britain, in 2 years. Britain was the first country to halt flights to and from South Africa when Omicron was discovered. The United States and European Union have followed suit. Kotsiavos says seeing his daughter over the holidays is now unlikely.
I think this time she's not going to come. She was planning to come. I think they booked the flight and everything, but I don't think they'll come. It's her and husband.
The South African government says travel bans are unfairly punishing the country for having the expertise to identify new variants. It says variants are found elsewhere in the world, but those countries aren't punished with travel restrictions in the same manner as Southern Africa. South Africa's foreign ministry says it's working to persuade countries that have imposed travel bans to resume flights. Linda Givtash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, we meet groundbreaking vaccine developers. Happening now in Asia, Cambodia's Prince Norodom Ranariddh, former prime minister and the son of the late king, died Sunday in France. He was 77. Ranariddh had been in ill health since an auto accident in Cambodia in 2018. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Their goal was to find a cure for cancer, but the world now recognizes them for developing a vaccine to protect against the coronavirus. The founders of the German company BioNTech, Uğur Şahin and Özlem Türeci, are now turning their long-term attention back to cancer. VOA's Dilket Moçen interviewed Uğur Şahin to find out more.
Uğur Şahin and Özlem Türeci made history by developing the BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. Now they are returning to their previous work, finding a cure for cancer. BioNTech is working to develop a new cancer treatment using the same mRNA technology that was used to develop the COVID-19 vaccine. Shaheen, who was in Washington, D.C. for a scientific panel on cancer treatment, intends to break new ground by merging mRNA with CAR T cell therapy, normally used to treat blood malignancies. Their goal is to merge these two technologies and create a cancer treatment that targets solid tumors.
So there is not yet great evidence that CAR T cells work in solid tumors, but we believe that the combination of the right target, plus the vaccine could help to overcome this limitation.
The CAR-T treatment entails removing T cells from patients, genetically modifying them to target cancer, and then reintroducing them into the patient's body to attack the tumor. Shaheen says he's after Claudin 6 protein. His research is currently underway to combine CAR-T cell therapy with a vaccination to increase the body's ability to produce CAR-T cells and increase the amount of time they can fight cancer in the body.
The Claudin 6 is on tumor cells, yeah? And we have on the T cells a receptor, yeah? A CAR-T cell receptor which recognizes Claudin 6. If these CAR-T cells are infused, they recognize and kill tumor cells, but at a certain time they stop, yeah, to grow.
The problem that may arise in CAR-T cell therapy is toxicity. Medical experts say it can cause cytokine release syndrome with severe inflammation and brain swelling and can be fatal. In healthy cells, the absence of the Claudin 6 protein targeted in BioNTech's therapy appears to minimize this risk, say researchers.
We have seen from our study, it's still early, that this type of treatment appears to be safe, and we see clinical activity in some patients with shrinking tumors, which is exciting.
Shaheen says the goal isn't just to shrink the tumor, it's also to make sure it doesn't come back. Although Shaheen doesn't specify the precise number of patients in the study, but says the number is between 20 to 25. Their patient selection depends on whether the target Claudin 6 is expressed on tumor cells.
This is testicular cancer. This is ovarian cancer. These are patients with endometrial cancer, uterine cancer. We are also including patients with sarcomas, soft tissue sarcomas. And we had also a patient with a rare breast cancer type. But this are less frequent.
At the annual meetings of the Society for Immunotherapy of Cancer in Washington, D.C., Ur Shaheen presented some very early data from clinical studies. According to Shaheen, the treatment typically takes 3 to 4 years to reach the market. While previous CAR-T cell treatments in the United States cost roughly $400,000, it's difficult to predict how much BioNTech's treatment will cost if it's approved in the future. Dilge Timoçin, VOA News, Washington.
Read and see more on the latest coronavirus developments at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Former South Korean military dictator Chun Doo-hwan died Tuesday at his home at the age of 90. Victims of his authoritarian regime and democracy activists are determined to continue the fight for historical justice. His legacy is marred by records of severe human rights violations. There's more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, more Afghan refugees are approved to enter the United States. VOA's Dina Mitchell catches up with one family who has now been here for 3 months.
Abdul Aman Siddiqui had celebrated Thanksgiving before on American military bases in Afghanistan. But tonight, he is at an Afghan restaurant in Houston, Texas, with his family and a few new friends. 3 months after fleeing the Taliban, he has much to be thankful for.
This is a small gift from my other two brothers.
Siddiqui is receiving some money from a Houston family, which he plans to use toward buying a car. It usually takes around 8 months for a refugee to settle in the U.S., Sasanya Wafak, who works with the YMCA International, which helps refugees resettle in the United States. She came to the U.S. as an Afghan refugee herself 6 years ago. She is the caseworker for the family and is translating for Siddiqui. Siddiqui worked with the U.S. Special Forces in Afghanistan, which allowed him to apply for a Special Immigration Visa, or SIV. The week the Taliban took over Afghanistan, Siddiqui and his family arrived in the U.S. In Houston, the family walks wherever it can, like to this local health clinic to check on their youngest son's sore throat, or to a local park for both kids to play.
When we arrived here, we had nothing. And right now we have our food stamp card, we have our social security cards, we have our green cards. I have my permit, the driving permit. If you'll not have a driving license, it's going to be very hard to live in America. My wife is doing really good. She started her computer classes. She got a laptop that she's studying with. 2 days in a week, she's going to her ESL classes, the English classes. And someone from YMCA actually taught her how to do the, how to get on the bus. He's saying that she actually teaches me too.
And in a few days, Siddiqui, who helped troops find bombs in Afghanistan, will start his first job in the U.S. at a food packing warehouse. He said he's not so excited about the line of work, but nevertheless very grateful to have a job.
He's saying that I'm really happy that finally I found a job and I'm able to go and work, and I'm very happy for that.
In addition to making a new life for his family in the U.S., family back home in Afghanistan are calling, asking for help.
People don't have a job in Afghanistan, and they're not able to take care of themselves and have food to eat. And they all are having issue, and most of the time they're calling me, asking me for money. And we were thinking that maybe everything will get better, but everything is getting worse every day. Special force
amerikayi budem. 3 months after the Taliban takeover, more and more Afghans are arriving in Houston, Wafek says.
Last week, Monday and Tuesday, we kind of picked up around 150 people.
So Houston is a popular destination because there is already an Afghan community there, including shops and restaurants, Wafek says. Siddiqui, in fact, has been in touch with some old friends from Afghanistan in Houston, in addition to meeting new people from all over the world.
We have been outside, me and my wife, and we have met some Arabs, some Americans, some Mexican people. But still, because of the language barrier that we have, it will take some time that we will be able to blend to the culture and to the system here.
Getting to know other cultures, another American experience. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, Houston, Texas.
Making headlines in Asia, Australia has brought in travel bans and new quarantine orders because of concerns about the new Omicron COVID-19 variant, first reported in southern Africa. Two cases have been discovered in travelers arriving in Australia, and urgent testing of arrivals is underway. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in early October, a ruptured underwater pipeline spilled crude oil in the waters off the Southern California coast. Almost 2 months later, life in Huntington Beach is back to normal, but residents say the reputation of the tourist city has been damaged and businesses are still hurting. Ginia Dulo reports.
Orange County resident Brian Yoon, who comes to Huntington Beach to surf regularly, says he was here in October when the oil spill was first noticed.
First thing, I step onto the sand and, there's just tar balls everywhere. So I'm, already, getting, sand on my hand or, tar on my hands and everything all over my board. And, no, it was crazy.
The oil spill released nearly 95,000 liters of crude oil, 5 times less than initial estimates. Extensive cleanup allowed beaches to reopen 8 days later, but commercial fishing in the area remains prohibited. Meanwhile, the investigation into the spill remains ongoing. Last month, the U.S. Coast Guard named a Panamanian-registered cargo ship as a party of interest after an anchor-dragging incident in January. And just this week, officials said a Liberian-owned cargo ship also is being investigated. Last week, California lawmakers met with state officials to discuss the oil spill response and evaluate the damage done to local communities. Huntington Beach Mayor Kim Carr says the city has spent nearly $500,000 on cleanup costs and had to cancel some large tourist events which affected local businesses.
It hurt our reputation as a tourist destination, and we're trying to get the message out to people that we are open for business, we are safe, we're clean, but we have seen reservations take a hit. And we know that the local businesses are also down.
Mike Ali, who owns a tourist shop near the Huntington Beach Pier, says he lost $50,000 when the last day of the Pacific Air Show was canceled.
So people take their vacation and they come down to the beach because we have nice weather. So we have lost that. Normally I have 10, 15, 20 European and Canadian customers a day renting surfboard or riding a bike. I have zero today.
The State Department of Fish and Wildlife said earlier this month that testing of fish for contaminants could take nearly 3 weeks, putting off commercial fishing till at least the end of November. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Huntington Beach, California.
COVID-19, rising inflation, polarizing politics. Americans are entering the holiday season with a wide range of worries, impacting the mental health of some. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports on ways people can come together and safeguard their own mental health.
Americans are bracing for the holidays. Some will be gathering in person with their loved ones for the first time since the pandemic's onset almost 2 years ago. And this could lead to strong emotions, especially over delicate matters.
Speaking from personal experience, people definitely like have very different views on like vaccination and that kind of thing. So I'm sure that'll definitely be a point of contention.
A lot of what we may not have known about some of our peers, colleagues, and friends may have come to light, particularly on social media. And I think that it'll be important to have those, you know, real-life conversations to understand what people's true beliefs are.
And that will mean being sensitive to people's state of mind after a rough year, says psychiatrist David Charney.
There's a general increase of irritability in the entire population. Whatever comes up, it's not going to be improved by getting into an argument because you're not going to change anybody's mind. Find the areas where there's community of spirit and thought.
A mindful approach is also recommended towards those who are grieving a COVID loss.
What people need is a chance to describe their thoughts and their feelings in their own way and in their own good time. If they are not ready to talk about it, leave them alone.
Paying attention to one's own mental health during the holiday season, especially if spending it alone, will be essential, notes Professor Jagdish Kupchandani, who has been monitoring Americans' mental health during the pandemic.
14% American adults are addicted to internet. It's causing them serious anxiety, symptoms of depression, and also the fact that their social life is disrupted.
Finding a balance when using technology will reduce the stress, he adds.
Avoid boredom, isolation, do something new, learn a new skill, get a hobby, go out, volunteer, help someone.
Sherry Gallery, whose family has been selling Christmas trees for nearly 40 years, urges people to be around nature.
This, you know, is our small way, I guess, of helping mental health. If people can smell the beautiful smells of live pine, fir trees, that helps.
It's a joy that Chef Adam Hernandez doesn't take for granted after the financial difficulties experienced by the restaurant industry this year.
Finally, we came and had more options, you know, to get like Christmas tree, like we just bought now. So it's pretty exciting.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia program. Continue with us online. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. You'll see us on Instagram and YouTube as well. And of course, you'll find all of our full-length programs at our home, voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.